Woover, a triple play on a Wednesday. It's now 27 minutes to 9 o'clock. Gavin Steinhoebel, our attorney at law from Kloppers Inc., is in the house. Nice to see you again, Gav.
Yeah, good to be back. You know, after the flu, it reminds you of that Fundamava joke that used to be told when Van's knocking himself on the head with a brick, and they say, why are you doing that? He says, it feels so nice when it stops. And the flu's like that as well. You actually feel better than healthy when you bounce back, you know.
Well, a hell of a lot of people have been down with, and still are, with ailments, and it seems like the protocols of COVID-19 were very effective at eliminating most of them, you know, in terms of not shaking hands, wearing masks, washing hands frequently, etc., and all those winter ailments kind of disappeared, most of them disappeared. For that period of time, we forgot about that.
Yeah. And
then when it was all over, off came the masks, out came the normal, going back to, you know, singing, dancing, drinking, prancing, hugging, kissing, shaking hands, and all of the flu.
I'll do all of those things and take flu as my penalty, because not doing those things is not nice.
Well,
so,
there it is.
You know, we have to live.
That's our human condition.
Yeah.
And we're going to be talking today about, well, I'm sure it's the kind of subject that everyone is involved in one way or another, and that's the national dialogue.
Oh, dear Dave. You know, I was listening to Cyril opening this, and I had to turn it off because he so cannot read the room. You know, he's basically said we're gonna talk about everything. You know, we need action. We're going to talk about, you know, poverty, inequality, gender-based violence, all those things he normally trots out as the diversionary thing. What we want to know, Cyril, is how much have you and your cadres stolen from us? Okay, when are you going to pay it back? Who's going to jail? When are we going to catch these fraudsters? Is it going to continue, or are you going to change in government? Are you going to clean it up? Can you even clean it up? Have you let it go too far? You know, those are things that people want to know. Why do you have, you know, 750 million rand to have this national dialogue when, you know, people actually need help?
Yeah.
You know, 750 million rand can send a whole lot of people to university that can't afford it, or can build a school or a hospital.
I think the national dialogue was born, wasn't it, really?
Because the way they throw around money, Dave, you know, they spent 200 million rand taking Israel to the ICJ. We don't even have a dog in that fight. You know, I mean, it's just money to them means nothing. They've lost touch. They've completely lost touch with the electorate, and they're going to get punished for this. This is these are the last kicks of a dying horse.
Did you see at any stage, because it's fairly visible on social media, in a public forum, I think it was a parliamentary session, or it may not have been. It might have been the National Dialogue, even. Tera Lakota coming out as honestly and as straight-faced as he can possibly be, with the accusation that Cyril Ramaphosa sold them out in the 70s to the security branch when they were all arrested and imprisoned and then consequently sent to Robben Island. Cyril did a deal, according to Lakota, that he blamed them for having confused his mind, and and the security structure then said, shame, poor fellow, you were deluded and you were led astray, but now that you've seen the light, we will release you, which they did.
Mm-hmm.
He went on to make lots of hay while the sun shone, and his mates spent a long time on Robben Island. Now, the chickens seem to be coming home to roost to a degree. I'm not sure if that's the case. But
well, if Prince Mathishile is right, maybe we will eventually see Cyril in prison. You know, it's, you know, the point of that I want to make is this: these are all diversionary things. Oh, look over there! Look over here! But the truth is, you know, I'd like to know. This is what the dialogue should be about. When are you going to stop your ruinous economic policies and give this economy a chance to grow? You know, when are we going to fix that? When are we going to have policies that take us beyond 1% growth to 5% where we should be?
But is the point not that those that are currently ruling the roost and determining these policies are doing fabulously well?
They are. They're not affected by it.
So therefore, for them, the system is working brilliantly.
Mm.
Yeah, but why would they change?
And do they even notice? You know, do they even notice? Are they so divorced from reality and from the reality of people in South Africa that that they don't even realize anymore?
But is that not the human condition? I think last week you alluded to the fact that everyone starts off, I think, wanting a better world and a better future for the next generation and doing their best, you know. When you suddenly get exposed to the delights that are yours for the taking when you have the ammo, why would you ever want to stop?
Yeah, I mean, I can understand that somebody might feel quite justified, you know, pillaging the fiscus if they feel that, you know, all those years that they were in the struggle, they should be rewarded for. You know, but that doesn't make it right.
Clearly not, but is this not the human condition? And then another question, if you were in a similar situation, and it's a question to ask, and I often ask myself that, you know. Well, if I was given opportunity to engage
to become a billionaire without any obvious skill or without any obvious
would you not leap at the chance? And I think the answer is probably yes.
I think Solzhenitsyn said it the best in the Gulag Archipelago. He said that the line between good and evil runs straight through the middle of the heart of every man, and we're all capable of either. And so, you know, you have to be on your guard. You have to think all the time about that line and which side of it you want to be on. And I'm sure there are people in government that are on the correct side of that line, and there's others that have just got so used to it and so corrupted over time that they don't even know that they're corrupt. And, you know, I was just speaking to a friend of mine, and she's got in the Midlands a restaurant, and this lady came, an African lady arrived in one of these, you know, 4 million rand Gelandewagens, and sat down. She had all the Louis Vuittons and all of that, sat down, ordered food, and she was very impressed. And she said, you know, what are you here for? And she said, I came to visit my gogo in Loskop here, and, you know, so I went to the village and saw her. She said, well, that's nice. She says, you know, you've obviously been quite successful. What do you do? So she said, no, I'm in construction. And she said, oh, what sort of construction do you do? She says, no, I get tenders. And she just thought, oh, my goodness, you know, all of that wealth is of projects that were supposed to serve people.
Like her gogo.
And it just gets scraped off the top. You know, that's why the money never gets to the poor, because it gets hijacked along the way. And suddenly, you know, your regard you would have for this person as somebody who's made something of her life, you suddenly get this idea, well, you haven't really made anything. You've interceded yourself between government and business, and you're skimming off the top.
You know, there's an article that's about to be released in the next edition of Life and Style, the magazine, about one Sir de Villiers Graaf. Now, I knew very little about this man, but the research that's gone into the article and the subsequent document that has emerged from that is absolutely stunning. I mean, this is an example of how much an individual can do, given the opportunity.
Governor of the Cape, wasn't he?
You know, it's such a winding road. This but what he did for South Africa, as pretty much an unsung hero, because, I mean, you see, you don't know the history, nor did I. Mm. I just know the name somewhere.
I remember it in the history textbook somewhere in about standard 9.
They didn't even begin to touch sides. Like Hendrik van der Bijl as well, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I love the story of van der Bijl. That I do know.
Well, there are these examples of people in our history.
Jannie Smuts, Dinesh Raitz.
You can go through the world and look at examples of what certain people have done. And look, along the way, they did very well for themselves, generally speaking. Mm. But they didn't take it all. They were very happy to let the spirit flow. And they made, as a result of that, such a difference to the world that we live in. And I think therein lies a fabulous example of, it doesn't have to be all one way, you know. No one says that making money is a problem at all, and you know, congratulations if you've done it. But if you've done it...
It must be some sort of reward because you've done something useful.
There we go.
You know, because anyone can steal, and it doesn't take a special skill. Especially when you're stealing from government, because you're not stealing out of somebody's pocket directly. So there's no one squealing like you would have if you stole out of my bank account or your bank account directly. And so, you know, it is a tragedy what we've allowed to happen with our country. You know, we've lost all our prestige on the world stage. We are seen as a bunch of corrupt, incompetent people, you know, and that's just not fair, because they are very talented people, and they haven't come to the fore.
Yeah. I was absolutely astonished at the saga in Iran with our general Mapwanya.
Yeah.
Being able to go across relatively unfettered and make proclamations
and commit us to
this is the kind of stuff that you cannot really believe would be allowed to happen.
Speaking
on behalf of a country without the authority to do so, at a time when the country's hanging kind of on by a thread with regard to the American situation.
And then we're basically making common cause with one of the biggest pariahs on the planet, you know, the sponsor of terrorism. Their proxies, Hezbollah, Hamas, the Houthis.
Now, look, in fairness, the government has come out and said, "Ooh, we knew nothing about this and we do not sanction them.
I don't believe them. They've cozied up to Iran for a long time. And it's not a good time to be doing this, because Iran's is seriously beleaguered as a country. You know, not even the Arab nations have any, you know, they've all got antipathy towards Iran. So you go, well, you know, why are we making this ally?
But now, you know, what I find quite peculiar about the entire saga is, on the one hand, you have a Democratic Alliance Minister, Andrew Whitfield, who went across to America having applied for permission, apparently, and had been ignored. So he went, came back, and was fired.
Never went in an official capacity either.
Well, now there is just one example of, if you transgress, this is what happens. Here we've got an exactly the same scenario. In fact, not exactly the same.
No, it's a thousand times worse.
But a scenario nonetheless where someone has apparently gone without sanction to another country and done something. Now he's come back. Why isn't he fired?
At a time when our cozying up to Iran is becoming very, very expensive for South Africans and the South African economy, with absolutely nothing to gain.
The point of principle there that says that the president is not, he's not doing what he's doing with a kind of even hand, not even vaguely trying to. And I think that is an absolute shocker, really a shocker.
Yeah.
Considering the implications,
I've got a feeling that the general in question is a strong man, and that he can't be easily dismissed or got rid of or sanctioned even.
Well, you see,
and so because of his status, he can just do what he likes.
And there have been increasingly loud rumblings about the potential for a coup d'etat, and I think you mentioned that coup can't happen without the military.
Rumble, you know, it just might well be that, you know, the military in this
and
country,
you wake up one morning for a family meeting with General Mpwanyana or whatever his name is.
I'm almost desperate enough to swap Cyril for anyone.
No! We must respect the office.
But we do need action, and we're not getting action. We're just getting stories and fairy tales, and that's not going to change anything. You know, I think South Africans, change is coming. It is unavoidable.
Yeah.
If it's going to be a long time coming, there's going to be a lot more suffering.
Yeah.
And if it's quick, there'll be a lot less suffering.
I see the long-term polls say that at the next election, the ANC is only likely to hang on to Limpopo and the Eastern Cape. Those are the only provinces they've got a hope of gaining a majority. The rest, goodbye, Charlie Brown.
From your lips to God's ears, because we need to clean up. Yep.
This is, you know, surveys that have indicated that's going to be.
We need to clean up. I think everybody can sort of. And I sense that, you know, when you talk about coup d'etats, I do sense that that people in all sort of branches of government are quite tired of these people at the top, you know, because they're undermining government itself and they're making a mockery of our government, and they're just carrying on with criminality with complete impunity. So, you know, we do need change. Change is coming, Dave. It's coming. It's just, as I said, hopefully it's not a long time coming, because then there's a lot more suffering yet to come and a lot more devastation.
Gavin Steinhobel, attorney at law. We have a chat on a Wednesday regularly at this time. It's always an interesting conversation, and you're welcome to join in the dialogue by, you know, if you've got a question you want to raise, we've got a WhatsApp line. That's 071-185-1471. Gavin, I look forward to continuing the conversation in a week's time.
Thanks, Dave. I'll see you next week.
And the morning show continues.